Hello and welcome everyone to Agents of Tech, the podcast where curiosity meets innovation. I am one of your hosts, Autria Godfrey.
And I'm your other host, Stephen Horn. Autria, it's great to see you again, but not so great to see you in that small window.
I couldn't agree more, Stephen. It was so wonderful to get to sit alongside you last week in Minneapolis, Minnesota for the American Physical Society's annual meeting. I know you are an old pro at this meeting.
I am an old pro. This is my 12th time of going. It was your first meeting, Autry. So how did you find it? What did you think of it?
Oh, I thought it was absolutely fascinating. I mean, the amount and breadth of science that is there and that's on display and that's being discussed and being unveiled is just unbelievable. But, you know, something that I thought was really cool is that while it was my first time at APS, they were there celebrating 125 years of APS and their collaboration across academia, industry, and major labs. And something that stuck out to me was, in their very first meeting, they had only 36 people there, but now here we are celebrating 125 years, and this year they had closer to 13,000 researchers and scientists. So, I mean, if that doesn't just show you the explosion of research and innovation, I don't know what will.
And I think to sum that up, you know, the breadth of the content in our show here is, you know, is the absolute perfect example of that. You know, we've got three great interviews to show you. Your interview with Alison Patterson, you know, that from Syracuse University, that must have been so interesting for you to sit down with Alison.
It really was. So she is an award winner this year. She received one of the highest awards bestowed by the APS. So we had the absolute amazing opportunity to sit down with her, and she discussed her research into complex living systems. But something that really stuck out to me is that, and we get into this in the interview, is that, you know, she's doing her research, she expects it to take her one way, and then all of a sudden COVID-19 kind of comes into play because of where her research took her. So we got into that in the interview. I think you'll enjoy it coming up a little bit later on, how we talk about how the pandemic, you know, kind of played a role into what some of her research outcomes were.
Yeah, and we also sat down with Young Key, the president of APS, and Jonathan, who's the CEO of APS, and they talked about exactly that, didn't they, about the breadth and diversity of research in physics today.
Right. I think something, and you'll probably agree with me, that we heard over and over again was like global collaboration and addressing global challenges. And, you know, you can't just work in your own little lab anymore. You've got to be sharing your information and sharing, you know, your data. And we really get into that with both the president and the CEO. But really, you kind of kicked things off with a bang, Stephen, even before the conference got started.
I think you're just jealous.
I am.
Yeah, no, I got to go to Lund in Sweden. I went across the bridge for Scandi Noir viewers from Denmark to Sweden. And it was great chatting to Anne, and I found out what an attosecond is. For those of you who don't know, it's a billionth of a billionth of a second. Let's take a look at that interview. It was a great place to start. Anne, welcome. And thank you ever so much for having us here in Lund.
Thank you.
So, Anne, let's go back to the beginning. What got you started in physics? What was your motivation?
I think I have been thinking about physics and mathematics at a very young age, so I don't really remember. I had scientists in my family, so maybe I was a little bit inspired by my ancestors, but this is simply something I like to do and I continue to do.
I should say absolute congratulations, of course, for winning. I'm sure I'm the 100th person to offer you those.
More than that.
Those congratulations. But what went through your mind when you got that phone call?
Well, I can tell you that the only thing that went through my mind was, how am I going to continue my lecture? Because I was in the middle of the lecture, and the people from the academy wanted me to stop and to just be on the phone. And I had 100 students waiting for me. But it has to be secret one more hour. So this was the only thing that went to my mind, how I'm going to survive the next hour. And actually what I did is actually go back to my lecture and continue teaching. So getting the Nobel Prize, I simply didn't have time to think about it.
Maybe you could tell us just a little bit about attosecond physics and what you won the award for.
Well, attosecond physics is the science of generating very, very short light pulses in the attosecond range and using them for studying electron motion in matter. And I won the Nobel Prize because I contributed to the discovery of the phenomenon that is used for the generation of this attosecond light pulses, which is called high order harmonic generation. So this was back at the end of the 80s in France. We were looking at the emission of light when atoms are exposed to a very strong laser field. And instead of seeing fluorescence light, which was the goal, we saw very high order harmonics of the laser field. And this was unexpected and extremely fascinating. Then a few years later, it was conjectured that maybe in the time domain, these high-order harmonics would make a very, very short light pulses, a train of attosecond light pulse. And this was measured experimentally, actually 14 years later in 2001 by my two co-laureates, Pierre Agostini and Ferenc Krauss.
Talk us through a little bit of your career to get to that point. What were some of the, I know you've been working in the field, as you said, for a long time. So what may be some of the breakthroughs that you achieved during that time?
This happened actually 37 years ago, so it's a long time ago. And at the beginning of my career, it was after my thesis, but I was a young researcher at that time. And this was an unexpected result, and which was fascinating. So I think this is the greatest scientific breakthrough I've been part of, and this is why I got the Nobel Prize for. Yes.
So how important has the APS been during your career?
The APS has been important. I've been a member of the APS for a very long time. I think end of 80s I became member. I became fellow in 1998, and I think that was very important. This was beginning of my career. I'm convinced this was important for getting position in Sweden, for example. And just recently, I got the APS Davidson-German Prize, so I'm very, very proud of that.
In Minneapolis, there'll be a lot of people there from all over the world. And I've heard you speak before about the importance of international collaboration.
Yeah, international collaboration for me is very important. Everything we do is collaboration, and it's international collaboration. So European collaboration, I think, has been very important for the field of attosecond science. And in general, international collaboration, it's fun, it's important. Of course, a little bit of competition is good, but I believe more in communication, communicating the results, the ideas. I think this is something important for science to move forward.
I believe you're only one of a handful of women to win the Nobel Prize for physics. How important do you think diversity in physics is?
I am the fifth woman to get the Nobel Prize in physics. And it's interesting because there were only two women during 120 years, Marie Curie and then Maria Goeppert-Mayer. And then the last 5 years, three women got the Nobel Prize in physics. So there's something happening here. There is more and more women, although it's still very, not very much. But I think the trend is positive. I believe it's very important that there are more and more women that do physics. And it's important to have diversity in a research group. So I'm kind of positive, and I really hope that this trend that we may see will continue.
Talking about what you're doing right now, I mean, you said that, obviously winning the Nobel Prize is very important. How has that changed your life?
Oh, it has really changed my life a lot because I get so many requests for interviews, for giving lectures. And it's very much from Sweden, from France. Both countries are very happy with the prize from everywhere. And also a theme is really women in science. So I got a lot of requests to talk about women in science. So it it has changed a lot, but at the same time, giving these Nobel lectures, I think it's important to inspire the young generation. So I'm happy to do it for a while, at least. I hope this will not be too long, but yes.
So I'm in Minneapolis, a lot of young people starting their careers in physics. So what's your message to them?
Well, my message to them is that it's a great career. So if they like to do physics, they like research, if they are a little bit passionate about it, I think that's important. They also need to be stubborn to be able to continue in spite of difficulties. I think they should just go for it. It's a great job.
That's great advice. Now, my final question, as always with these type of interviews, is an impossible question. So, so it's the APS's 125th anniversary. Looking forward to the next 125 years in physics, what do you see?
Well, this is a very difficult question. I don't know the answer. But what I think I discovered during the 40 years of my career is that I think today there are more things to understand in physics than there were 40 years ago. We discover more things, but there is even more thing we don't understand and we should try to understand. So, and also I really believe that science is going to help society to solve big problems, for example, climate change. So I think it's really important to, I think there is a lot to do in science and in physics in particular.
Well, thank you very much indeed for that. And thank you so much indeed for joining us. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, it was such a pleasure and an honour, really, Audrey, to sit down and talk to Anne. And, you know, they showed that interview on the big screen there with the other Nobel Prize winners, which was, you know, really, really fascinating. One of the things that she said to me right at the end of that interview that struck with me, she said that, you know, we have more challenges now than when we began her career. And, you know, we've solved a lot in that time. But as we learn more, we find out we've yet more to do.
It's so true. And Stephen, I think you're downplaying it. Your interview with her, I mean, she's a Nobel laureate, was truly one of the highlights of the entire conference. You mentioned that they, you know, showcased it in one of the sessions so that everybody could come in and watch. And it was just so very well received and just very, very interesting and engaging. So kudos to both of y'all. And, you know, we also got into, and I think this is something that you were talking about with, you know, your interview with Anism, with something that we got into with the APS president, Young-Ki Kim, and the APS CEO, Jonathan Bagger, was how the focus has really expanded to international efforts, interdisciplinary research, making sure that all of the research that's being conducted is relevant to global concerns. Let's take a listen to our interview with them and how they elaborate on that a little bit more.
Jonathan, we want to get started with you. We are celebrating 125 years of APS, quite a milestone year. How would you say that the physics community has changed over the course of that time?
During the last 125 years, the physics community has grown, it's diversified, it's become more international, has really had fantastic influence on society, on the way we live today. At this meeting, for example, the first meeting of the American Physical Society had 36 physicists, and here in Minneapolis we have over 12,000.
That blows my mind that it was only 36 physicists coming together for that first meeting. What growth we've seen. Young-Ki, how would you say the priorities have shifted for physicists over these 125 years?
First of all, as John mentioned, that we are much more global, and physics is a global enterprise, and we are planning to have a much stronger international connections and collaborations with societies and physics societies outside of the U.S.
John, let me take you back to that first answer when you're talking about the change that we've seen. And we have plenty of change still to come, right? So how do physicists engage with societal change? What are the major challenges that as a world that we face?
That is a terrific question, because really the world is facing tremendous challenges these days, ranging from energy to climate, food security. And physics really will play a role. in the solution to each of these problems, but that requires that we as a community reach out to neighboring disciplines, reach out to other countries because they'll require global solutions, and frankly also reach out to industry because that's the way to really have impact as well.
When I had the honor of chatting to Anne Lahoulier, she was sort of saying what's fascinated her in her career is that physics has risen up to face a lot of challenges, but as it does that, there's more we don't know. There's more challenges that sort of come up. So Yongki, what do you think physicists could do more of to engage with society and with the issues that we face?
Well, as Jonathan just mentioned, we have tremendous challenges. This is a global challenges. We can do much more, stay outside of our own discipline, but collaborating with other disciplines. Again, these challenges, global challenges, the solutions have to be very innovative, creative, and which needs different disciplines to work together, not done by one single discipline. So that those big challenges require more and more their multidisciplinary approaches. So we have to do much of those societal issues as a part of our the work.
You've both been mentioning about, you know, the international outreach and global collaboration. And Yongki, you've said that global collaboration isn't only a necessity, but that there's also beauty in it. I would like for you to elaborate on that just a little bit. What do you mean by there's beauty in it? And how important is global collaboration?
To tackle any challenge, this is a particle physics, the field of my physics, or this is a more global challenges, I've learned from my own experience is that diverse voices and the experiences, background play a very important role. Mm-hmm. So imagine that we have a collaboration of thousands and think that everybody is thinking exactly what I'm thinking. You know, one and thousand are the same, mm-hmm. the brain. But having diverse brains and with the different backgrounds, we can really think questions and issues of very different perspectives, and that's the key to finding innovative solutions. So that's what I mean, beauty. So it's like a big orchestra with all different instruments have amazing beauty. So that's I feel that international multidisciplinary approaches of finding solutions. That's what I mean.
I love that analogy of a symphony.
Of an orchestra, yeah. No, yeah. I love it too, but you know, I'm mindful that when I go home tonight and I switch on the television, the view of the world I'm going to see is not of an orchestra and of a symphony. It's an increasingly fractured world. So Jonathan, how do we keep the sort of collaboration? How do we keep the music flowing when you know, what we see around us is fractured?
So we're very fortunate in physics to share a common culture, really a culture that transcends national boundaries. And that gives us a great basis on which to build. In fact, just recently, a group of over a dozen physical societies from Europe, Asia, North America, South America have come together to sign a statement for the rules of the road, the principles for international research collaboration: integrity, transparency, and reciprocity. Everybody agrees that those are bedrock to future international collaboration.
Well, let me kind of finish off by throwing a question, a very challenging question to both of you. So we're in a world of very fast technological change, you know, and we see so much happening, so many developments kind of every year. How do we, as physicists in the scientific community, do our best to make sure the advantages of that technological innovation is open and available to everyone?
One way is to make sure we're bringing the public along on our journey with us, because physics really is for everybody. The opportunity to do physics needs to be open to everybody. The fruits of physics need to be widely shared. And no, we're not politicians, you know, we're not social scientists, but we need to be working with the broader world to ensure that the fruits of physics are shared globally.
Thank you both ever so much indeed for joining us and taking the time. We really appreciate it and really enjoyed it, haven't we, Audrey?
Absolutely. Thank you both.
Thank you.
So, Audrey, we now know, don't we, that 2025 is the international year of quantum, isn't it? And an exciting year that's going to be. And as Jonathan said, you know, they're actually going to merge the March and April meetings of the APS, which to the APS is a big deal.
Oh, huge. I mean, they are already busy in that planning stage. So I certainly hope, Stephen, that you and I both get to be a part of that event next year. It should be very exciting. All right, turning now to, like we mentioned earlier, our sit-down interview with Allison Pattison. She was the Maria Geppert Mayor Award recipient this year, which, as I mentioned, is one of the biggest awards bestowed by the APS. She's a researcher at Syracuse University. She gets into, here in her interview, all of her research in biomechanics. So let's take a listen.
Well, first off, congratulations on this award. How does it feel to be honored by your peers in this way?
It is a big honor, yes. It's a surprise, so I'm very grateful for this opportunity.
Wonderful. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the work that you were awarded for. Can you focus a little bit more for us on exactly what your research looks at?
Yeah, so I'm in the field of biophysics and mechanobiology, and so we think about how the physical forces impact how cells move, and how cells can generate force and remodel their environment and able to perform their functions. And so we have two main thrusts. One is we look at the polymer network, the cytoskeletal protein vimentin, and how it helps cells generate force and remodel the nucleus and protect the nucleus from damage when cells are trying to squeeze through tight places and like small confining tissues. And then we also have an area where we look at the biomechanics of biofilms and study how physical cues like substrate stiffness impact how they grow and develop and coordinate their behavior.
And so you take this research and use it to do what? What type of impact does it have?
So we are interested in very fundamental questions like how do cells generate force, but there are applications. And I like that my research kind of spans from basic to potentially translational research, right? And so, because sometimes we find that our findings can have an impact. So for instance, during COVID-19, we were aware that vimentin played a role in the SARS-CoV-1 host cell evasion.
Wow, okay.
So we decided to do a study and ultimately found that it is involved in the SARS-CoV-2 host cell invasion, and you could use antibodies against vimentin to block its uptake. And so we're hoping that we can continue that kind of line of research, but it kept us very motivated, especially during the pandemic.
When you can take your research and see real life, you know, applications, it has to be very rewarding.
Yes, yeah.
What is it that you enjoy most about the work that you do?
I really like working in this interdisciplinary area, so I get to bring a lot of creativity to the projects. And I also really like working with students and getting to see them grow and shine.
Incredible. What advice would you have, like you mentioned, you know, working with students, what advice would you have for anybody that might just be getting into this field?
Yeah, so I would say you don't have to be afraid to take a jump and do something different. And I would also advise getting good mentorship. I think having supporting people around you and good mentors can really help you guide what your background and your interests are into how to have an impact in a field if it's a new thing for you.
Can you kind of take us back to when you were just getting into the field, how you managed to end up in this, you know, certain specific form of research?
Yeah, so for me, it was actually kind of a gradual transition over years. So my PhD started out kind of in dead materials, dead complex materials, which ultimately became a good basis for me. But I became drawn more to biological physics because there's a lot of opportunities there, and I think a lot of the major discoveries in science over the next, in our lifetime, will be in the area of biological physics.
What would you say are some of the biggest challenges when it comes to your research and looking at this specific type of phenomena?
Yeah, so I think a challenge with working with cells and biological materials is there's just a huge number of factors and different proteins that can be involved.
Okay.
So you have to be kind of cognizant of the other major players and how they may fit into what you're looking at, even though like you may be zooming in on one protein.
You mentioned earlier that you specifically look at how cells respond to their physical environment. What kind of responses are we talking about here?
So we're talking about things like cell speed, cell division, the shape and structure of the cell, and also quantifying the forces that cells generate in different environments.
And what role do these types of responses play in our biological functions? Like, for example, wound healing.
Yes, so right, that wound healing is a complex process that involves cells remodeling their environment. They have to build certain molecular structures that will pull the tissue back together. They're interacting with their neighbors in their matrix to do that, and this whole time they're responding to the chemical and the physical cues to help close that gap.
You've also been looking at the influence of mechanics on collective behavior of bacteria. Yes. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Sure. This is some work we're doing right now. We're looking at things like cell stiffness, nuclear stiffness, cell contractility, and how cell-cell interactions and cell matrix interactions promote how these cells collectively move out. And so right now, we are actually measuring the forces like a cell aggregate will exert on their environment and trying to figure out if an aggregate of cells that is more solid or more fluid-like, if that promotes whether they can generate more force and migrate out.
Where do you see your research playing a role in the development of maybe new technologies?
I think we may in the future end up with some therapeutic new options, right? I talked about a potential COVID-19 strategy, but also if we want to promote wound healing or perhaps hinder cancer and metastasis, right? Mm-hmm. Are there strategies, are there certain proteins that we can target to facilitate that?
Well, we focused on your research this entire time. I would like to talk about you. What's next for you?
What's next for me? So hopefully more fun things, I think. We're working on things like thinking about bacteria or cells in mazes, and also some more health-related projects, in particular vimentin and inflammation. So.
Okay, well, fascinating. Well, thank you so much for your time today. Again, congratulations on the award. Best
thank
of
you.
Luck. So Stephen, some really fascinating, you know, information and research from Allison there. Her, award, very, very deserving. And it's interesting, you know, we started out today's episode with your sit-down interview with a Nobel laureate, Anne Lehoulier, been, you know, in the field for a very long time. Allison Pattison, you know, received her award as somebody who's kind of new in their field, new to the career. So it's kind of interesting how we've included two women who are making a mark at very different points in their career.
No, absolutely. And as Anne said, though, you know, there's still only five women who have won the Nobel Physics Award. So great to see so much progress, but so much more yet to do. So it's the end of this episode, but I just want to tell you what we've got coming up next, Audrey. You know, I've got another Nobel Prize winner up my sleeve in Mongi Bawendi, who won the Nobel Prize for quantum dots. You know, that really, really is fascinating technology. And I'm also joined by Stuart Parkin, who is revolutionizing memory. And of course, as we've said, it's the International Year of Quantum Science and Technology.
A big year ahead with 2025. And like you said, a big episode ahead coming up next. All right, be sure to subscribe and watch on YouTube and Spotify. You can also listen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you choose to get your podcasts from. But be sure to stay updated with new discoveries coming out from Agents of Tech every single month. I think that was a pretty impressive episode, Stephen.
It was pretty impressive, and I really loved it. So, Orchard, so thank you for that. And until next time, it's goodbye.
Bye-bye.